This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
She said her name was
Chappelle.
It's Saturday night. That could mean only one thing. It's the Chappelle Show.
We love you, Chappelle.
The Chappelle Show.
Cosmo Jarvis, welcome to Joy 94.9. Welcome to the Chappelle Show.
Hello.
We appreciate you coming in.
Thank you very much.
Now, I just want to start by saying I've seen your videos and your photos and all of that. Right. You normally have quite short hair, but you've come in today and I didn't realise you've got... You could almost have a fro if you grew hair out a bit.
I used to have one at school, but then it was too froish, so I bought loads of cheap hair gel and every day in school I'd fill it with gel and I had nits at the time. And I'd be sitting in exams and little bugs would be falling out of my hair, so I cut it short. But I'm only growing it long because I've got this idea for a movie I want to make next year.
Yeah.
And I need to grow it down to shoulder. I play a metalhead and I'm going to grow it really long.
How does an afro grow long?
Well, I guess it'll get to the point where the structural integrity of the fro will droop, and that's what I'm hoping. I mean, I hope it does. I don't want to grow a fro because that just wouldn't work.
You know, there's that point of growing out a fro where you go in between sort of fro to long hair and it goes to that frizzy phase.
Yeah.
How are you going to cope with that?
I'm going to wear lots of hats, I think, and beanie type things just to cover it.
To be big hats.
Yeah, I know. I wish you could just forward time and get past the growing stage,
because
it always looks dodgy.
Yeah,
but it should be okay.
People will understand though.
Well, I'll have to give them an explanation if they should ask why I look like such an idiot.
Absolutely. You'll have to introduce yourself. Hi, I'm Cosmo, just growing my hair out.
That's I've been doing this whole time.
It looks great though. I think it's really cute.
Oh, do you reckon?
Yeah.
I don't like the side bits sticking out. I can deal with the top being long, but I don't know, it just looks stupid.
I don't think they
it's
stick
good
out.
For hiding. I always if I've got chewing gum and the flavor's still good and I'm eating something, then I put it behind my
don't
ear.
Don't say it. No? Really? You put it behind you hide it?
No, I put it behind my ear till after I'm done eating and then I eat it. But with this hair, you can't do it because it gets
stuck. Yeah, really. I have naturally curly hair and I constantly lose things in it.
Oh, great.
And I'll be washing my hair and then sticks fall out and...
You should be a smuggler.
Oh my God, I should. Sorts. I need to make more money.
Yeah.
What do you recommend I smuggle?
Nothing.
Other than the obvious.
Yeah. There's nothing that's illegal that's worth anything.
That's right.
Else, I don't know. Whatever.
I'll have to brainstorm. We'll talk later.
Yeah.
Great. So you've just released an album. We should probably get to your music and your films and all that. Called Think Bigger.
Yeah.
It came out on July 23.
I'm glad you know.
How's it going for you?
So far, people don't hate it, which is really good. And it seems to be going better than the other two albums that I released. So that's all positive.
Yeah.
Well, it's positive. It's good. So far, everybody has a favorite track and all the favorite tracks that people have are different. So that's good.
Yeah. And I think with this album, all your albums have been great, but it's sort of an evolution of sound, really. As we were talking about a little bit earlier, your first album was quite personal, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, you moved into a funny second album, and this one sort of, you seem to have matured. We could say. We have to use that word, bandied about.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I can understand why people think that. But I mean, where the songs have come from, it's still, they're not chronological. They're songs on this new album that I wrote when I was 12.
Yeah.
So it's still a bit of a mishmash of stuff.
But if you wrote it when you were 12, you obviously had to reproduce it for this album to re-record it.
Yeah.
Did you make any big changes from older songs?
Yeah, the original versions. For example, there's a track called Tell Me Who to Be, and that started off as a reggae song. And then the second version I did was like a kind of Blink-182 kind of punky kind of thing. And then it kind of became whatever it is now. And yeah, I had to kind of make things cohesive because I was told that a lot of the stuff I was doing on the last albums were kind of perceived as being not self-indulgent, but I really dig instrumentals. But anyway,
you're bringing it back.
I'm trying
to. Cosmo Jarvis is bringing back digging something.
But yeah, anyway, they told me I had to be a little bit more cohesive with it.
But I mean, you have been doing music and art and film and all that since you were really young.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still really young, but I mean, considering, it's been at least, 10, 15 years you've been doing music?
Well,
ages.
Music, ages, say. Long time.
And you've got loads and loads of music. You've got a big back catalogue. You've written loads of songs. How do you go about choosing what's going to fit onto an album? Because you can't have 30 songs on an album.
Well,
it
I
just
would,
won't sell.
Yeah, it won't sell. That's the problem. Well, yeah. I'd like to do that one day, have like huge albums. I mean, recently I used to just like think of an idea and I'd record it straight away, because I don't like the writing process. For me is the recording process, pretty much, or it was. And then so like I'd think of an idea that I thought could be song worthy, and I'd just record it and mess with it and screw with it until I got to the point of tinkering where I would realize that it wasn't a wholesome enough idea to warrant seeing it through to the end. Whereas now I've got loads of other stuff I've been doing, so I kind of choosing my battles a bit more, you know,
with the song or with any of your processes,
or just with music.
Yeah,
kind of picking which ones are worth recording, and then so it's like the filtration process is a little bit more arduous.
Beautiful.
Not arduous, you know, selective.
Selective. Careful. But do you think that's necessary as a songwriter? Because, I mean, you could just be constantly writing day in, day out, and you might not always write quality.
Yeah, I definitely don't. Some of the stuff I write is absolute rubbish.
Do you think that matters, though, or do you only want to put your best quality product out there for the public?
Oh, this is it. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I'll have something that I absolutely hate, and then, like, you'll get a good amount of people on Facebook, like, really liking it, and that's a huge problem, because I don't know. And my managers think they know, but they don't know, really.
Yeah.
And
you can never predict.
It's kind of, you just have to, like, it's like how, like, with films and TV shows, they test them on their audiences. Mm. I just test them with my friends, and test them with my not friends, and test them with my friends' parents and friends, and try and...
Person down the street.
Yeah, just random people, like... I give a lot of CDs. I live around the corner from a Subway, and I give those guys CDs, and they don't have, you know, I kind of just get like a general average of comments and then use those to see what's going to be on the album, I guess.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, because you make films, you do music, you direct your own videos, you load heaps of stuff onto YouTube, and it just seems as though you're constantly doing stuff. Not only are you making loads of music and film and short films, but you also seem really involved in that social media side of things, interacting with people. I've noticed on a lot of your YouTube videos, you'll actually interact with people making comments.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, you're out on the street, you're giving people your music. You seem very involved in that part, which isn't very easy, because you have a lot on your plate.
You're
not only multi-skilled artistically, but a lot of artists really struggle to do both sides of that.
It's kind of like, yeah, I know what you mean. I don't reply to everybody. I get, if somebody's got a good point, then I'll definitely get involved with a conversation on like a YouTube comment thread or a Facebook thread or whatever it is, because it is like, it's cool being able to, like, you know, crap something out and then have instant feedback from people.
Yeah.
And if they hate it, then, you know, that you've got to quickly tear down whatever I just posted, because, you know.
Don't let anyone see.
Yeah, the first five people were like, they're like, oh my God, what are you doing, man? Yeah.
But I just don't understand how you can find the time.
Oh, just, I don't do anything else, really.
It's just that, it's just constant every day.
Yeah.
Like, you sort of live, breathe, and eat your art.
Yeah, I mean, there's other, there's like, you know, other promotional stuffs and obviously because with the videos and stuff, there's a lot of like, a lot of the TV guys, they have like a very strict format that they want my work delivered on. And, and I'm not a professional at that. I mean, I can edit and everything. I can do all that stuff. But there's so, now with digital video editing, there's so many different new formats coming out all the time, new compressions and whatever, and sometimes that's hard, and I wouldn't like to be doing that, but I have to, because there's nobody else to do it, and I'm cheap. Well, I'm free, because I just do it.
Yeah.
So that stuff takes a little while to do.
But even that blows my mind, being able to edit on top of everything else you do. Because for the listeners who might not be fully aware, you've directed a feature film, you do all your own videos. I imagine you put the concepts of the video together as well.
Yeah, write the treatments,
And I just think that's phenomenal. And on top of that, to have the skills of an editor. Is that just because you've been doing it for so long?
There's no point in getting anybody else involved, because if they, you know, people cost money, and that's why a lot of artists blow 20 grand on a music video that looks like it could have been done for free.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, you know, if you can do it, then do it. And I'm, you know, I've, from being a nerd for several years, I've just kind of gotten better at finding my way around programs. So I might as well just do it. And then, you know, the few people that I can actually work with on the videos that I do, like my housemates mostly, the few people that I do work with, they can spend a lot more time on dealing with their department of creative
exploration. Yeah, for sure. So you get people in who can help you in different ways. Do you find that, does that mean it makes you more of a control freak with your work, or that might have already been the case? Or
I think,
Or can you be too close to your work?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But I mean, but not in a way that I would ever not make it a creative decision for the sake of being, like, I mean, if there's no other way and I have to cut something that took a long time to do, or musically, if I have to cut like a section out and because everybody's like, you have to get rid of that, it's too long or whatever, then I'll do it.
Mm.
But I mean, I don't know any other way, really, because no one's ever been like, hey, I'm going to take you under my wing and be your producer with film or music or whatever it is. Nobody's ever done that. So I'll just, until that happens, I'll just do it myself, because otherwise, because there's no other way of doing it. And the alternative would be not doing anything and waiting for people to give you funding or to get on board creatively and be, take charge and say, I've got a great idea for, you know, this next album's going to have this sound or this music video is going to have this. No one's ever really done that.
And I think that's a really good point that you say, that a lot of people that wait around for things to happen or wait around to be signed by a major label or whatever, they just sit there waiting and complaining. And the people that just go and do it, even if it's on a smaller scale, tend to get
Well, at least
really
it's your
response.
Work. I think that's the way I think about it. It's like, it's with music videos and stuff like that, you've got like a real great platform to do a completely different piece of artwork that can either sit next to the music that inspired it or that it's supposed to be promoting, or or, you know, it's an opportunity to make another totally different thing. And if you, and so I can do it, so I'll just do it. Like, you're right.
And do you think, in a way, which leads into my next question, because you might not have a million bazillion fans, but the fans you do have love you. There's not like, oh yeah, Cosmo, he's all right. It's like, we love Cosmo Jarvis.
Yeah.
And do you think that's because of the personal touch that you're so involved in your work?
I don't know why it is. I think
people love you, man.
That's very nice of them. I think it's just because they, like, I'm not trying to, like, con them into liking my stuff.
Yeah.
I'll put it out there for what it is, and if they like it, then that's awesome.
Mm.
And if they don't, then they don't. And so you... Very early on, the people know what they're going to get or what they're getting, because I've kind of, they know that I'm going to do stuff myself, and there's going to, and a lot of the stuff is quite homemade, and not it's not like a lash up or a bodge job, but it's like it's made within the means that I can make it with, and they know that, and I think they appreciate it for that, and also, like, I try and make thorough ideas. There's not a lot of, like, you know, greased women in clubs gyrating and that, just for the sake of that, because that's what appeals to the I don't know what you call it, like the demographic that just likes whatever, because mainstream platforms tell them to like that.
Absolutely.
Like, there's not a lot of, I don't really cater for those people. Although, not to say though that some of my stuff doesn't, like, isn't
appeal widely.
Yeah, some of it can, but if it does, it's a fluke. It's a complete fluke. Yeah.
No, I like your work. I think it's good. It's really, every video is quite different, and that doesn't happen very often with an artist. And maybe, you know, because you're not so prepackaged and trying to decipher what the market wants, you just go and do your own thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why people are so responsive.
Maybe.
Now, we can't. This is Australia's first and only lesbian and gay radio station, so we can't not talk about Gay Pirates.
Right. Okay.
We absolutely have to. And it's a great song. Like, you have no, I'm sure people have told you how important it is for artists and people to get behind the anti-homophobia movement, whether or not you intended it to be that way. Andrew Bell, who's a presenter here on the Full Catastrophe on Joy, he wanted me to ask you what the inspiration was behind Gay Pirates, because to him, you know, it's a touching yet brutal song that just to him equals wonderful. So what was the inspiration?
It's really difficult to talk about, because, like, I had no big point to get behind the gay thing. Like, I wasn't going to be like, I'm going to get on with that because I know that there's a massive gay audience and I know that there's loads of gay music lovers. And I wasn't, like, trying to make a point by doing that. It was sort of like the point came from the anti-point, which was kind of to make a song which was sincerely about a relationship between two members of the same gender, that but the fact that it was about two gay people was like a fact. Oh shoot, wait a minute, it was just like a fact of the song. Like, it wasn't the point, it was just, it happened. It was a love song that was supposed to be as thoroughly and well emotionally written, that just happened to be about gay people. Because if it was like, this is a gay thing, then it would be making a gimmick of the idea of homosexual relationships.
Absolutely.
Which I didn't want to do, and it would have been too easy. Like, I mean, loads of people could have been like, I could tell early on that when I had the song, everyone was like, make a video that's really, like, gay and camp and whatever.
Mm.
And you know, the video and the song, I wanted it to just be just like, you know, this is just a fact. These people are just happen to be gay.
Yeah, it's just a love story.
Yeah, it's just a love story. And that was the point, because I hadn't really heard anything that hadn't been doing anything that wasn't gay, that hadn't been making a gimmick out of gayness before. And I just wanted to just do it, like, because I just felt like it needed to be done. And the reason it was Pirates was because it was if you were on a ship full of homophobic people back in the day and you did have a gay lover on the boat, then it would be pretty horrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And as you've detailed in the song.
Yes. But I thought that it was like a concentrated and slightly abstract way of conveying like a relatable to today's day and age. And the whole fact that, like, tons of people I went to school with, there's this ongoing thing of like, if you're gay, then you're sub man. A lot of people think that you're like, you don't possess the capability to to be as passionate or as manly about whatever. Mm. And that's bollocks. Like, yeah. You know, and it was kind of, the drums in the song were kind of supposed to give it like a power and to express the, like, the passion of the love, like as many men have with women, but just about a man, and to kind of trick these jock guys that would come to my shows into like being like, well, yeah, we're having a great time to this song, and they'd be like, yeah, but you're dancing and having a great time and being as passionate, you're being passionate about a gay relationship, and they're like, oh shit,
but it's okay in
but
the
it's
end.
Okay in the end, yeah. And just to think twice about it, you know, because where I live there's a lot of that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So Gay Pirates, when it did come out, it wasn't played on BBC One.
Yeah.
And we will go there. And that was because in one of the lyrics is you use the word gang rape.
Gang rape.
And they decided not to play the song. I mean, and arguably that could have affected the success of the song.
Definitely.
You could have been, it could have been, I'm not suggesting maybe number one or whatever, but loads more popular.
It could have been much popular than it was in the UK for sure.
Did that experience of them censoring you and ultimately, you know, potentially holding back your success?
Well, just they screwed up Gay Pirate. I know people would have liked it in the UK. They definitely would have. Like, if they'd have just given it a shot and played it like a couple times.
Yeah.
But they just didn't even do that.
Would that, has that ever wanted you to self-censor though? Do you feel more conscious that you need to be careful what you say in order to get more airplay?
No way. Like, why not? I mean, even on this album, there's songs that could be massive, like, you know, hooky singles with good choruses. And I'm not allowed to talk about what they're about for fear of it being detrimental to the airplay. And if anything I go out of my way to put things in to a really shiny single that is a little bit more, because right now the way it is like the vaguer the song, the more relatable it is, the more likely it is to get airplay.
Yeah.
Because they want vague, meaningless songs with all of the formulaic
stuff. Melodies, catchy hooks, all that,
and that's what will get you a guarantee. And but no way I'll write whatever, and if it doesn't fit, then it'll just take a little bit longer to get, you know, wider listeners from those mainstream platforms.
Absolutely. And where do you want to go with your art? Because we can't just say music, because you do film as well.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go? What do you want to be?
I want to just keep making films.
Yeah.
Like, keep making music, keep making albums, and have some sort of release on some sort of level, as long as it's available to the people who've been following already. So as long as they can keep getting stuff, then that's great. And with film, I'll keep making my, you know, 8 grand movies. And I've got another one that I've wrote that I want to make next year. And I can never look past the next project, because you never know what's going to happen. And maybe somebody will come along and be like, hey, we want to work with you. Or, you know, you can act in this film. Or we want to help you make your film or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It could happen.
So your film, you made it on 8 grand.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only seen the trailer, but it looks like it would have cost more than that. How do you make a film like that? What was it called again?
The Naughty Room.
The Naughty Room, sorry.
Everyone thinks it's a porn movie.
Well, that's why I clicked on the trailer.
Yeah, I'm
sure. I was
like,
what is this?
That's why I would click on the trailer.
Well, you were in it, so it was fine. In a bathtub.
Yeah.
It's kind of a compromise.
Yeah.
It looks like, it would have cost a lot more than 8 grand. How do you keep a film like that and shoot it to 8 grand, to that budget?
By having a really unprofessional crew who will take risks on my ideas that professional theatre students wouldn't necessarily, or professional actors who are used to going out and working with people that, you know, they want. I would have been sued so many times for the injuries my actors have sustained in the production of this movie. Like, but they do it because a lot of the way that we shoot is like a handheld, and then improvisation is really encouraged. Just like, let's just, you know, here's A and B, we'll do it how I wrote it, then we'll do it how you want to do it.
Yeah.
And then I'll mash up, and when I'm editing, how the best performances that I can.
Mm.
And just by knowing my limits production wise, because I've been doing it for a while, I know what kind of shots are achievable that will look good. Like, for example, like in movies like, I don't know, like There Will Be Blood is an expensive movie, and movies like that, and like No Country for Old Men, cinematography and stuff like that, I learned pretty early on that like symmetry is an indulgence that's available to everybody, because symmetry can be found anywhere. And just like good framing is, in general, you can frame things well on any money. And then the DSLR revolution happened, so everybody was shooting on DSLRs.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, my camera operator, this guy called Dan, DOP, he lives locally, he was making music videos, and I was like, can you help me? Because obviously I was going to be acting in it, so I needed somebody who could film.
Mm.
And he was like, yeah, and he turned up with this camera, and we just did it. It was shot on 2 cameras, and just not so often, like first time indie filmmakers, I don't know, or the guys that are in school anyway in England, a lot of them, they're like, well, we need a gun, we need a briefcase with an elusive purpose, you know, and they're like, let's make
someone with a thick accent.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And those often go wrong. And I spent a lot of time writing the story. And if the story is wholesome and has a, you know what the point is, then I think in the execution, it will just sort of happen, hopefully. But just not by kind of trying to achieve anything that's too, you know, like you have to be ticking your own boxes and nobody else's, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So like, sort of the same with your music, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Where do you get those skills? I still can't get my
head around. Which is also made very cheaply, by the way. Yeah.
But it still sounds fabulous and we love it.
Thanks.
I can't get my head around these plethora of skills that you have. Were you formally trained or it's just something you've been working at for years and years?
Just playing around, like being a bit of it, being quite nerdy and just like playing with programs and wanting to like make things and just making sure that they get done one way or another. It kind of comes from that, like,
yeah,
that,
even with film and that sort of
yeah, just from messing around. Like, there was a program called ULEAD Video Express, which I got when I was pretty young, and I used to make webcam movies, just playing until I, but also being self-critical and being quite disciplined about how you play and that kind of thing, that helps. It wasn't just like a DOS, it was like, but I definitely taught myself more than I would have learned if I studied it at my school.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, hands-on learning.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe if you'd been around 20 years ago or even 10, 15 years ago without social media and digital and this, you'd have the success you do now?
I'd be screwed. I wouldn't be able to get anything anywhere. It's YouTube is definitely the it for now. I mean, being able to put stuff up and having people just find it and make their own opinions and leave their comments and maybe share it if they want to, if they think it's worth sharing, that has been the only way I could have done anything. Otherwise, I'd probably just be, you know, sitting in my room still.
It's so much more personal.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, I guess, with making YouTube videos and that sort of thing, when I was preparing for this interview, I didn't even look at your Wikipedia page. I mean, who would? But in terms of research, all I did was watch your videos.
Sick.
I mean, I read a couple of interviews very quickly, but it was like, this guy puts out so much material, and it's, you know, sometimes you're playing a role, just a camera, it's you singing a song that you've written, doing short films, and perhaps you as an artist, and maybe this is what all artists aim for, I would presume, is that it is about your art form.
Yeah, 100%. It's the work. It's nothing. My name, unfortunately, has been attached to my work. And that's just a bummer side effect of branding and whatever. But it's per work. It's per piece of work. It's nothing. There's no overall big idea or big thing. It's just like making sure that each song or film or performance or music video, whatever it is worth making and is as best made as it could be with the means I have to make it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you do it even if you didn't have the success that you have now?
Yeah, definitely. I've never had like a real job. I've done bits of like work experience. I did some work experience did a week, but that sucked. I did a few odd jobs here and there. I do some editing, though. I make other bands' music videos every now and again.
Yeah, cool.
But I can't really do anything else. And my social skills are quite poor as well, so that leaves a lot of time for making things. So, yeah.
Alone in your room making videos.
Yeah.
So do you often think through things when you're making these short films and videos? Do you prepare them for very long, or it's just like, I've got an idea, let's do it?
Some of them are like that. There's been a lot of like, I'll wake the guys up and be like, I've got this thing, let's shoot it quickly, let's go. Let's make it. But then with the film, that took a while to write, and I planned it as best as I could. Not to say that what we shot was anything like what I wrote, because if you're like the way that we work, you find shots that you didn't even know you wanted till you shot them. But and the spontaneity of shooting that way, you can get a lot of cool things, like, you know, just happen with the music videos as well, like imperfections that give it a kind of honesty that you might not be able to fake if you were writing it. But some of them are planned for quite a while, some of them aren't. It depends, really.
It's like loads of fun either way.
Yeah, sometimes it is. I'm working with my brother as a production designer. I've been beating the shit out of him a few times.
That's what siblings do, man.
I know.
That's just normal.
He used to drum for me, but next time I'm coming back in December for a bunch of shows. He's going to be drumming with me again, because my other drummer, he couldn't make it. But my little brother's going to be doing it. So we'll probably have some fights, I'm sure.
It's normal.
Yeah, I just don't want to get arrested like in this country, because I'd be quite scared to get arrested in another country. I've never had that happen before.
Have you been arrested in your own country?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What's that like?
Oh, I've never had like a jail sentence, but I've been in overnight cells quite a few times. Not for being an asshole, just for various things that I've...
Misdemeanors.
Yeah, you know, a lot of drunk... I got arrested after a festival in Cornwall which was bad, and I got arrested on New Year's for, like, there were these four cops just kneeling on this guy's windpipe, and I was just like,
oh wow,
you're kneeling on his windpipe, he can't breathe. And then they were like, he was just like, back off. And I was like, all right. So I took a step back, but then he kept getting closer and saying, back off. But if he wants me to back off and he's coming closer, then what am I supposed to do? Apart from, I think he just wanted me to not watch what they were doing. And anyway, yeah, I was in a cell, and yeah, happens quite a lot.
Well, that shouldn't laugh. Is that scary though?
Nah, it's funny. It's funny because it's a good time to rehearse for acting performances and,
okay,
you know, and write things in there. And
are there tears to get you out? Is that what you do?
Tears?
Yeah. Do you cry, like, in order to help you get out?
No. I do like a tough, like a, you know, like a Tyler Durden, just do a bit of that from Fight Club. You just act like a nut job, and it's funny because every now and again four guys will storm in and wrestle you to the ground, and it's just, I don't know, it's funny. But some of the guys in police stations are really cool, and some of them aren't. It's funny.
It's a way of life.
Yeah.
So Andrew Bell has another question that he's wanted me to ask you because he's a really big fan.
All right.
And he will kill me if I don't. Now, he really admires your ability to use the everyday in your songs.
The everyday?
The everyday in your songs.
That's all there is, though. It's just, you know, stuff. Like, I draw inspiration from pretty much anything. I put anything that seems like a good enough inspiration to warrant putting work into making something. But yeah, it's a lot of everyday stuff because that's the only stuff that I do when I'm not doing making things. It's just, you know, everyday
living. Yeah.
Speaking to hitchhiking, meeting a lot of people from hitchhiking, just stuff like that, because I can't drive yet. So I'm getting to a lot of good conversations with people. And it's as if, like, sometimes if I'm hitching a ride, like, it'll be like I've known them for ages, because we'll just have, like, because they feel comfortable with the anonymity they have around me and I have around them. So we can, in many ways, talk a lot more honestly and sincerely than with anybody that we both know. And I kind of like quite open with stuff anyway. But it's a lot of inspiration comes from those kind of meetings with people.
How often do you hitchhike?
Quite a lot. Like,
just in England or around Europe?
I've never done it around Europe, only in England, because I've heard, like, here you have like a murderer, don't you? Or something.
I've got loads of murderers all around the place.
A hitchhiking murderer, though. I got told, like, don't hitch here because there's still this guy that's on the loose or something.
Oh, I don't know about that. We've got loads of... No? There was a guy in the outback, an English backpacker was killed years ago, but they caught the guy. So
did?
I would never go to Central Australia. Like, I would never go out into the desert.
Really?
Even as an Aussie, I wouldn't. Because people get killed all the time. We had, like, backpacker, serial killer, the guy that murdered the English guy.
Oh, no.
Have you seen Wolf Creek?
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, Wolf Creek's a good movie.
It's a great movie, but scared the bollocks out of me to ever go into the bush.
Imagine if that happened.
No, thank you.
It'd be so bad. But no, it's all right. You can get away with it. People, it's frowned upon and people think you're a reprobate and they look at you funny. But every now and again, like, you never wait more than 2 hours for a ride. Like,
do you deliberately, when you hitchhike, do you need to get somewhere? You're like, I'm just going to go out and catch a ride.
No,
today.
I usually need to get somewhere, but I allow a good many more hours than it would take if I was using public transport, because I know that it's going to take a while.
Is it always the same kinds of people that pick you up, or do you find like it's a range?
Same kinds, usually.
Yeah.
The only weird one was this like single dentist lady once. She was like a, you know, functioning member of society, nice lady. Like, she was older. She was a dental lady, and she was all, I was like, why the hell are you picking me up? I could be a rapist or something. But she was.
She could be.
She could. Yeah, nah. She wouldn't have been able to. Well, maybe she could. Chemical rape. I don't know. Maybe she could have done that. But yeah, it's usually either like the kind of, you know, laid back kind of normal kind of music loving dudes who are just like, you know, I think music fans are much more like, yeah, I'll pick you up, whatever. The boy racers don't pick you up because it would be detrimental to their reputations. Or like a lot of Polish people pick me up. Like, I don't know why, but they're just they seem to be pretty cool with hitching in the UK. Like, I don't know why, but yeah, it's either the kind of hippie kind of duty kind of people or the Polish people, and then every now and again you'll get like a weird one-off that's like, holy hell, I can't believe you picked me up.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange people out there. Do you often, like in films, you see someone who gets picked up and the person that picks them up is that sort of steely silent type that doesn't want to engage with you at all?
Yeah.
Does that happen?
It's happened a few times.
And does that defeat the purpose of like why you like hitchhiking?
No, because then I just mirror them, and then nothing goes wrong. Like,
okay,
they won't talk, and I won't talk. But then if they make a tiny comment about something, I'll like notice it, and then try and make a comment about the same thing, and then that lets them know that I'm not gonna do anything weird or anything. Because often they're only being like shifty and quiet because they're kind of scared of the fact that they've just let me in their
car. Absolutely.
And it's kind of, but it's so good though, because it's like a real psychological exploration, and you wouldn't get that anywhere else, because you're sitting next to this person and
in a small space,
in a really small space, and you're smelling their smells and listening to their music, and you know, if they smoke then they're smoking, and you just learn so much about them. And you know, if they've got like kiddie seats in the back, I don't know, it's pretty interesting. I've written a lot of songs about that, or I've written a lot of songs that derive from social things that I kind of first thought about because of hitching scenarios.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
How old were you when you started hitching?
Oh, man. Pretty young. I must have been like 10, 11.
No way.
Getting the old ride. Not a long way, but where I used to live, it was all like villages.
Right.
Separated by long stretches of road. And so it'd be like, if you wanted to get somewhere and you didn't want to
You were 10 years old and you couldn't drive.
Yeah, you just hit thumb a ride, whatever. It was, and I kind of just did it whenever else since then, kind of, because public transport sucks. I mean, it's too expensive and it's not frequent enough, because my part of the world's kind of like, you know, it's not like London where you can just get like a bus anywhere anytime, pretty much. It's like, it's like we all sleep with our sisters and we're all in bread and that sort
okay,
of thing.
Right.
That's London's opinion of us.
Oh, right. I thought you were actually being serious for a moment then. I was
No. I've never slept with my sister. I'd sleep with my stepsister though, if she was, you know, up for it. Definitely. I think stepsisters are fine. Well, and cousins. Fuck it, cousins. I'd do a cousin as well.
Well, we won't go there.
No, don't go there.
Where do you live?
Like South Devon. Like, okay. It's not quite as south as this place called Cornwall, which is like, but it's like, it's by the sea. Yeah, yeah. I live in this like tourist place called Paignton now, because it's cheap, and it's kind of like a lot of tourists, but it's very seasonal, and when it's down season you just want to kill yourself and everybody wants to kill themselves, and when it is in season it's just like a lot of like really old people and pregnant teenagers kind of just like, you know, buying little ornaments to take back to wherever they live.
Yep.
Like
spoons,
yep. A lot of cutlery, things with the queen on, miniature guitars, a lot of wind chimes, bird houses. Just crap.
Do people ever come there because it's now the home of Cosmo Jarvis?
No way.
Oh.
Nah.
I'm
not known in it. I'm doing terribly in England. Like, I wouldn't even be able to. If I played a home show in my hometown, like, I wouldn't sell it out or anything. I have trouble getting people in. Like, I'm doing really bad.
Is that why you come to Australia?
Absolutely. No, it's just, this is the only place. Like, my music seems to be, like, being, you know, listen to.
That's interesting, because one of the few interviews I did read with you, but it was the first time before you came out here for the first time, and you were saying that you sort of like, you like our human, you're really excited about potentially coming out here and seeing what would happen.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And since then,
a bunch of guys came to my show from this place called Newcastle in Sydney the other day, and I didn't want them to get a bus back, so I was just like, you can come back to the hotel, like whatever, and they just chilled out, but they were so like much more, their sense of humor was just so dry and brutally honest, and I think that might be the reason why they like listening to my stuff. I don't know, maybe it's because of that, but I just really like that about it here. People just generally, I haven't met any dicks yet, let's put it that way. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty, but yeah, I haven't,
that's everywhere.
Yeah, but just in general, like, I think there are just a few less than in the UK.
So if your music is better received here and you quite like us, why don't you move out here?
Because I don't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
And also because I don't know anything about the visa situation or how that works. But I mean, if I would, I definitely would. If I could, I would.
Yeah.
I think, but I'm not going to migrate anywhere, because I've got to shoot the next movie in England, because it takes place there. So I'll do that first, and then after that, we'll see what happens. But what's the healthcare like here? Like, how does it work?
It's very similar to England, and you get reciprocal. So even if you were here not as like a permanent resident, it's reciprocal with NHS.
Oh, right.
So you'd get free care here.
Wicked. Mm. I'm diabetic, so I've got an American citizenship, but like it's pre-existing condition, so I'd have to pay like so much to get my drugs.
Oh, no, you wouldn't do anything over there. No,
I'd be screwed.
Now, my last question for you is, did you ever get Jessica Alba's number?
No, I didn't. I nearly got it though, actually, because I was on a label called Wall of Sound, like the first album. They were like an independent, and the song Jessica Alba's Number, like it was looking like it could be a single, and like he this guy was like, I know a guy who knows a guy who could get it. And I was like, do it then, definitely. Because just to see, I'd send her the song and see if she what she thought. Because I was like so in love with her then.
Do you know if she's heard the song or seen it? Surely she has.
I don't know. It'd be great to get some feedback from her. But then he, just as he was going to get the thing, the whole wall of sound thing fell apart. And I never really got it. But it would be great. But she's pregnant. She's had a kid and she's married.
Boring.
It's over.
Oh, well. She might get divorced.
I hope so.
Fingers crossed.
I hope so. She needs to get divorced. I need to grow up a little bit and I need to shave, and then maybe I'll have a 0.01 chance of something.
Well, it's still a chance.
I like to think so.
Cosmo Jarvis, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck. We'll see you again in December.
Damn straight.
Name of your album?
Think Bigger.
You can get it from normal places where you get albums.
Yeah. Just go online and there's all crap on there about it.
Fabulous. All right. Well, thank you.
See you in December.
The Chappelle Show.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.